Hello and welcome to Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters, and today we'll look into a number of stories and issues in the news. We'll begin with the siege at an upscale mall in Nairobi, Kenya, and speak with Makua Matawa, who is the Dean of the Buffalo Law School and a columnist for The Standard on Sunday, one of the two main newspapers in Kenya and East Africa. We will discuss the endemic political corruption in Kenya and how much it has hampered efforts to subdue the Somali al-Shabaab terrorists whose murderous rampage in retaliation to 4,000 Kenyan troops in Somalia is meant to drive a wedge between Kenya's Christian majority and its Muslim minority. Then we will speak with Ambassador Theodore Katouf, a former U.S. ambassador to Syria, who knows the ruling Assad family and has met with Syrian dictator's reclusive and violence-prone younger brother, Maher Assad, who heads up the regime's Praetorian Guard and its murderous militias. We'll discuss Iran's behind-the-scenes role in bringing about the Russian-American deal to control and destroy Syria's chemical weapons arsenal and the possibility of U.S.-Iranian cooperation in ending Syria's bloody civil war. Then finally, we will speak with Sister Simone Campbell, the Executive Director of Network, a Catholic social justice network, who the previous Pope singled out for criticism for her support of President Obama's healthcare reform push and her failure to promote church teachings on abortion, contraception, and homosexuality. We will discuss the new Pope Francis's radical reversal, de-emphasizing these issues while calling on the church to be less judgmental and more pastoral, as well as the fate of the Affordable Care Act after the House's 42nd vote to kill it in the latest showdown over shutting down the government to defund Obamacare. And joining us now is Makua Matawa, who is the Dean of the University of Buffalo Law School and a State University of New York Distinguished Professor. He writes a column for The Standard on Sunday, one of the two main newspapers in Kenya and East Africa. And his books include Kenya's Quest for Democracy, Taming Leviathan, Human Rights NGOs in East Africa, Political and Normative Tensions, and Human Rights, a Political and Cultural Critique. In 2003, he was appointed by Kenya's President Kibaki to chair a task force that eventually led to the establishment of the Truth, Justice and Reconciliation Commission in 2008. Welcome to Background Briefing, Makua Matawa.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having me.
And obviously, this is a very sad day for Kenya and for Kenyans. And so far, about 60 people have died and 175 have been injured in this, what is the deadliest attack in Kenya since the 1998 U.S. Embassy bombings. The situation has been going on since noon Saturday. It still continues as we speak. What's your explanation for why this thing has gone on for so long, Makua?
Well, I think, first of all, it's a tragic event in Kenya's history, coming clearly at just a horrible moment for the country, because, as you probably know, the president and the deputy president are indicted for war crimes at the International Criminal Court at The Hague. And one of the trials has, in fact, started for that of the deputy president. So the attack comes at a time of great angst and turmoil in Kenya. And as far as the attack is concerned, this particular mall is a complex that was recently constructed. It's an upscale shopping center, you know, for Kenyan elites and expatriates. And it's itself quite a complex building, you know, and so there are many places for attackers to hide. But I also suspect that the attack surprised the guards at the mall, you know, who are people have been very slow to respond to the attack. And so the attackers, you know, appear to have gained, you know, a foothold in some of the rooms and buildings within the mall. And in addition to that, I mean, it appears that the attack was well planned. Indications are that, you know, the attackers knew the building, the layout of the building, and therefore were able to really conceal themselves and obviously prolong this attack.
Well, there's no question that the attackers are Islamist radicals from al-Shabaab, the militia group in Somalia to the north. One of the first things that they did when they took over the mall was to shout at the people, stand up if you're Muslim, and we're here to save you. And that one of them asked an Indian gentleman the name of the prophet's mother, and he was unable to answer, and he was shot dead. So the sectarian nature of this is pretty obvious, is it not?
Well, there's no question but that, you know, Al-Shabaab is an extremist Islamic militia, which arose in the ashes, really, of the collapse of the Somali state in the last decade or so, after a prolonged period of state failure in Somalia. The ideology is really no different from that of Al-Qaeda. In fact, Al-Shabaab is an affiliate, an official affiliate of Al-Qaeda itself. And so the sectarian nature of the attack is without question. You'll recall that several years ago, Kenya went into Somalia to join the African forces fighting to oust Al-Shabaab from controlling the country. And that fight, which, you know, took about a year, was actually quite successful. And Al-Shabaab was driven from many of its strongholds. And of course, it then retreated into guerrilla, you know, attacks across the country in Somalia. In fact, a simultaneous attack took place in Mogadishu, the capital of Somalia, at the same time that, you know, they were attacking Nairobi, which appears to have been a kind of a simulation of the 1998 Al-Qaeda bombings in Nairobi, Kenya's capital, and Dar es Salaam in Tanzania, which took place at the same time. So, yes, I mean, there's no question that Al-Shabaab is behind the attack. They posted on their Twitter account, you know, a claim of responsibility for the attack, you know, and it is without question, I think, quite a barbaric act.
Again, I'm speaking with Makau Matua, who is the Dean of the University of Buffalo Law School and a State University of New York Distinguished Professor. He writes a column for The Standard on Sunday, one of the two main newspapers in Kenya and East Africa, and his books include Kenya's Quest for Democracy, Taming Leviathan, Human Rights NGOs in East Africa, Political and Normative Tensions, and Human Rights, a Political and Cultural Critique. In 2003, he was appointed by Kenya's President Kibaki to chair a task force that eventually led to the establishment of the Truth, Justice and Reconciliation Commission in 2008. And you mentioned the head of state, Uhuru Kenyatta, who is along with his deputy prime minister, William Ruto, who was actually in The Hague before the International Criminal Court. He apparently, as far as we know, he's been granted permission to go back to deal with the crisis in Nairobi. Already we've learned that the nephew, Magangwi, and his fiancée, Rosemary Wahito, they are nephews of President Uhuru Kenyatta, who have been killed in this mall attack, along with a Canadian diplomat, a very popular radio host, and a number of other foreign nationals, along with up to 60 people and 175 injured. And, of course, it continues with hostages taken as well. So tell me, you mentioned that the guards weren't up to the task. What do we understand about what's happening now in terms of hostage rescue teams, whatever? Is there negotiations going on? It's all, the news is pretty sketchy.
Yeah, it's pretty sketchy, you know, because I think that you know, the Al-Shabaab attackers are holed up in several places in the building holding hostages. And it's not clear how many hostages are being held. Some reports indicate that, you know, many people are missing, as many as, you know, 60 or 50 or thereabouts. You know, so it's unclear whether, you know, there are negotiations which are going on. Reports of gunfire, you know, continue to be received. But let me just, you know, say that with respect to the, you know, the tragic deaths of the people in the building, including the relatives of the president and the Canadian diplomat. Let me just say that this mall is frequented by, you know, people of means, and so therefore it is not really a surprise that those people were in the building at the time when it was attacked. You know, with respect to the deputy president that you mentioned, who is now on trial at The Hague, my understanding is that, you know, the court is going to hear his request to be excused from the trial so that he can go back to Kenya to attend to this particular issue. It's not clear to me whether the court will grant that request for him to be given a few days off to go back to Kenya before the trial resumes. If I had to guess, I would probably say it's probably unlikely that the court would grant the request, since the president of the country is in Nairobi taking care of business.
But this is not a happy situation. Apparently, a lot of people in Kenya are very uncomfortable with it. It's obviously a huge black eye to the country. And on top of that, now you have this ongoing terrorist siege in a very upscale mall in retaliation by Al-Shabaab, in retaliation for the presence of 4,000 Kenyan troops in Somalia.
Absolutely, absolutely. But let me just remind our listeners that both Mr. Kenyatta and Mr. Ruto ran for office as president, as a presidential candidate and deputy presidential candidate, fully aware that they were indicted for crimes against humanity. They knew that they were indicted. In fact, you know, Kenyan civil society filed cases in Kenyan courts to stop, you know, them from running for office, arguing that, you know, the indictment itself prohibited them from running for public office. The court cleared them to run for office, which, you know, appears to have been a mistake in itself. And on several occasions during the campaigns, you know, Mr. Kenyatta and Mr. Ruto were challenged by Kenyans to explain how they would be able to run the country while if they won the election, how they would be able to run the country while they were on trial at The Hague. And both of them assured the country that that there was no problem, that the charges for crimes against humanity were a personal challenge, as they put it, and I'm quoting that, personal challenge. And of course, as we are seeing now, clearly those charges weren't a personal challenge. And I have to say that they have put themselves and the country in this very terrible situation by running for office when they were indicted for crimes against humanity.
And Makoa Matau, the fact that they are political rivals who now are working together, albeit under this cloud, does this go to the kind of political class that rules Kenya? With, you know, there's an enormous amount of corruption involved in politics. It's just inescapable truth, as far as I can tell. And
yes,
it just seems to be that there's a political class that we're talking about here.
Exactly correct. I mean, you know, so we need to remind our readers that our listeners that in 2007, in the last election cycle before this past one, Mr. Kenyatta and Mr. Ruto were on opposite sides. In fact, Mr. Kenyatta's Kikuyu ethnic group was involved in the attacks against or counterattacks against Mr. Ruto's Kalenjin group. The two groups, the Kikuyus and the Kalenjins, attacked each other viciously, and it's from those attacks that you know, Mr. Ruto and Mr. Kenyatta are now standing trial at The Hague. It's perplexing to everyone that these bitter rivals, you know, came together last year, or rather this year, demonized the International Criminal Court, claimed that the court was, in effect, targeting Africans, that it was a racist court, and mobilized, you know, their ethnic communities to vote for them based upon, you know, these obviously baseless allegations against the International Criminal Court. And so I would say that the elites of the two groups, the political classes of the two groups, have come together, in a kind of a pact to save the two indictees from this National Criminal Court. It bears reminding that no Kenyan court has ever convicted a senior-ranking member of the political class for corruption. Kenyan courts have, for the most part, been unable or unwilling to pursue, if you will, powerful people in a country, powerful, wealthy, people in a country for either, common crimes or for the theft of public resources, or even for human rights offenses. And so this is why the International Criminal Court was an important lever to bring justice to victims, who were violated in 2007, 2008. You will remember that over 1,000 people were killed, 650,000 displaced, property, pillaged. It was just a terrible time for Kenya. So in a sense, one can say that the attacks, of course, on the Mo are just horrifying, barbaric, and savage. But the actions of the president and deputy president in running for office and the indictment and now standing trial at The Hague do not make life easier for Kenya.
Well, clearly, corruption has had a corrosive effect on Kenya and on the fabric of its society, because you recall recently the fire at the airport, the main airport in Nairobi, which took forever to get put out. The firemen were accused of looting. They didn't show up for the longest time. And I think isn't that symptomatic of a system of where the political elite is a sort of kleptocracy and it's sort of set in a kind of moral rot?
It's really quite sad, and it is sad in particular when you think that Kenya is the largest economy in Eastern Central Africa. It is the anchor state of the region. It is really a hub. Nairobi is a hub. It's crossroads for international activities in the region. Kenya's middle class is highly sophisticated, well educated, but yet the political class, is one of the most corrupt in the world. The fact that the police forces are themselves, they're corruptible and corrupt. The fact that security forces participate routinely in human rights violations, and in protection rackets for corrupt politicians. The fact that, when the fire took place at the airport, the fire engines were not working, that the fires had to be put out many, many hours after the fact, by people using buckets of water. One of the major airports in Africa did not have, a working fire, a single fire truck, that fire engine that was working. So this is just emblematic of the corruption, symptomatic of the corruption that I think is pervasive within the state, and which the elite has, put in place, over the years. It's clear also to me that lack security at the mall was responsible, is partially to blame for these attacks. The Kenyan state has known for a long time that Al-Shabaab might retaliate for the attacks, for the participation of the Kenyan Defense Forces in the war against Al-Shabaab in Somalia. The Kenyan state has known this for a long time. Why in the world the Kenyan state would not have put together in place security measures to make sure that, targets that are likely to be picked by Al-Shabaab, like, for example, major international hotels, shopping malls, places like the airport, that those areas would be secure from attack, boggles the mind. Why that was not thought about. It appears that that many of the guards at the mall may not even have been armed when the attackers came, to do their dastardly deeds. So it's really sad. And I think, as you correctly pointed out yourself, the state is a corrupt state. And I think what we are seeing now is the result of some of that corruption.
Well, just in closing, Macau Matua, obviously the Al-Shabaab terrorists are trying to drive a wedge in Kenyan society between the majority Christians and the minority Muslims. Are they going to be successful?
Not a chance. Kenyan society, in spite of the problems that I've indicated, here, is highly secular. It's a liberal society. There's a press that is, quite free. There's a middle class that is very vibrant. Religion really has not been a wedge in Kenya's history. And I think the country, the country's population, whether it's Muslim, whether it's Christian, whether it's Hindu, because all of those religions are represented in the country's, population, is fully aware that that Al-Shabaab is a group that that needs to be vanquished, needs to be pursued and defeated, and that I don't think any Kenyan is going to be moved to feel animus towards Muslims simply because, the Al-Shabaab attackers are Muslim. I think that particular part of it will not succeed. In fact, on the contrary, what has happened from what I'm hearing, from my friends in Kenya, is that the attack has brought, Kenyans of all walks of life together, in spite of their religious differences, and so I don't think so at all. I think, in fact, the opposite, will be the case.
Well, I thank you very much for joining us here today, Macau Matua.
Thank you so much for having me.
Again, I've been speaking with Macau Matua, who is the Dean of the University of Buffalo Law School and a State University of New York Distinguished Professor. We're going to take a brief station break and we'll be back talking with the former U.S. Ambassador to Syria.